When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Forza Napoli podcast. This is a podcast all about Napoli, of course, but you don't have to be a Napoli fan to enjoy it. If you're a Serie A fan, if you're a football fan, looking for the inside scoop on all things Napoli, this is the place to be. I'm your host, Joe Fischetti. Thank you so much for listening. This is our Genoa preview episode. Apologies for getting this out so late. It's been a bit of a hectic week. This episode will be a little bit different than our usual episodes. I was actually fortunate enough to be a guest on La Lanterna, which is a Genoano podcast hosted by Fabrizio Cardone of the Genoa Club Toronto and Matt Killen. Fabri and Matt were kind enough to share the audio file with me so that I could post it here on this podcast. So without further ado, here is our conversation ahead of Genoa-Napoli.
Welcome back to La Lanterna podcast, and we have a special guest. Well, I did meet him quite a while ago. I'm going to say it was not last season. It was the season before. That was the bad season for us. At least we went down. So he called me soon after the season because what happened was we had lost our center back, which we all loved him, called Ostergaard, and he called me saying, hey, do you want to come over to my pod because I want to talk and know a little bit more about Ostergaard? I'm like, oh, hell yeah, and give us him back to us. We want him. Anyways, let me let him introduce himself, and let me all just say, welcome to our pod, Joe.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on. I'm a little bit bittersweet about Genoa's promotion, which is going to sound defensive at first, but let me explain and you guys will understand. I love your podcast. I don't miss an episode. And for me, it was a great way to get insight into Serie B because I don't watch a lot of Serie B. There's just a couple podcasts that I follow, whether it's you guys or Rigore because they cover Venezia a little bit, or like a football, they cover all over the place. So for me, it was a little bittersweet that Genoa was getting promoted because great to have a historic club back in Serie A. Of course, it's where Genoa belongs, but selfishly, I guess I lost a bit of a source for Serie B coverage, but pleasure to be on. Can't wait to talk about, obviously, Genoa-Napoli on Saturday.
Of course. So let's talk about yourself. So what do you do? What talk a little bit about your pod.
Yeah, for sure. So I host the Forza Napoli podcast. I've been doing that on season 5 now, which is mind-boggling to me. Never thought it would go this long. To be honest, I started it as just something to do during the COVID lockdown. And it just continued to grow. It got more and more popular and people started interacting with me more. Now I genuinely have an entirely additional set of friends, let's say, because I still, it's not like I abandoned all my regular friends, but I know so many people that I interact with. And I've said this even on my show that, you know, not that I travel much, but on the odd occasion that I do, there's always an Napoli fan out there that I can reach out to and say, hey, where's a great place to eat? Like, I went to Nashville, for example, in the States, and sure enough, there's an Napoli fan there, and he told me where to get the best hot chicken, and you know, we met up for that, or obviously barbecue in Nashville. And I never would have had that connection, right, without the show. And then also about a year ago, a little bit over a year ago, I also started a website, fortsanapolipress.com, for people who want to get written content, which is also a way for me to cover the Primavera and the Femminile as well. It's a bit more difficult to cover it all on the podcast. So, you know, to have some written content. And it's also an outlet for aspiring writers or people who want to just have somewhere to post their thoughts, but maybe don't want to write consistently. And, you know, it's another source of English content for Napoli, because, you know, while the team is well run financially, let's say, one area that could really use improvement is their sort of international marketing and how they reach out to the non-Italian fans. And I'm sure a lot of fans of other Serie A clubs can relate to that. So, you know, for me, it's been a great way to interact with people. It's been a lot of fun.
It's exactly what kind of happened. I mean, for us, it's a little bit different, obviously, because we're not part of the larger teams. Even though we're the oldest, we're obviously not the most well-known, especially, I would say, nowadays. Maybe in the past, we were 100 years ago or so on, we definitely would have been, you know, the thing to be feared of, but not right now. And I guess differently to you, well, you say, okay, I can find Napoletani anywhere. For us, it's a little bit more challenging. Around the world, you do find some odd Genoani, but from there also to find clubs and so on, that's a little bit more challenging. And that's more like, we have our sister affiliated group or whatnot, which is called Genoani Si Resta. It's an Italian pod anyways, but they reach out to all Genovesi or Genoani that are around the world. So their audience obviously is Italian. For us being an English speaking pod, for us is not only to find if there are any Genoano that are mostly aiming for English speaking, but not only, of course, but also to recruit. So, and the fact that we managed and or found some sympathizers and so brought them on board, or even we always love to reference our friend Eddie from Alabama, the fact that he for the longest wanted to find a team and so on, and he just married our cause and so on and became a full-fledged and one of them. It's like amazing. So essentially that's what we're trying to do in our little thing, in our pastime. And actually, you said 5 years, but Matt, so in theory, it feels like 2 years, but truth be told, we started three seasons ago.
I know.
It was at the tail end, right?
Yeah, like the last probably 10 games or so of our relegation campaign, I think we started recording around then. That did include our last match between Napoli and Genoa. But Joe, I appreciate the kind words. I mean, I think it's what makes it so much fun for us too. Obviously, we're happy to be back in Serie A, but in the Serie B season, it was really exciting for us as well, because you just meet so many other fans of calcio. You get to know these clubs. You get to know a little bit more of what's happening, maybe not always in the spotlight, at least that we're used to paying attention to. So it's an amazing experience, and it's cool to interact with other fans out there that care so passionately about their club or about the same club.
Well, one thing I was going to ask you guys, because I was thinking about this, and I almost feel like, in a way, when you consider how Genoa's seasons were going prior to relegation, you were kind of hovering around the relegation zone for a little bit there, right?
Right.
Do you feel that, like, obviously no fan wants their club to be relegated to play in Serie B, even as competitive as Serie B is these days. But do you feel like that might have been a good thing, in a way that it was like taking a step back in order to take two steps forward?
I personally do. Fabio probably has a different perspective because he's seen this for a lot longer than I have. But I think one of the most important things for us was it gave us a chance to build on this strangely positive end to that relegation campaign that we had, at least as like a fan base, where we were getting a bunch of shit from Sampdoria fans. We're going down. And there was a period of time. I mean, the team actually, even though our performances were pretty poor, there was definitely like a big unity when Blessing had come in. And so there was some stuff happening there. And we kind of seemingly built on that in a way that I don't remember seeing in the years that I've been following the club. And it also gave us a different, like you said, it's a totally different dynamic when you're going down to Serie B. And it's not to take anything away from Serie B, because we saw it as well. It's an incredibly difficult campaign. But when you have the chance also to have positive performances, to win, maybe to also achieve the goal, then it gives you something. I think if we were again in Serie A and then we're finishing in 17th or something, that negative kind of dire situation, that doesn't get kind of flushed out. So I think it was really big, especially for just like the mindset of the fan base. Now, we maybe say something different if we end up in 17th by the end of the season or worse, but I agree with that. I think it was positive for the club.
I don't know, and Faber, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know what the attendance numbers were like pre-relegation, but I know listening to your pod that season ticket sales are through the roof, like crazy, amongst the top clubs, which is unbelievable for, I mean, again, most historic club, but still technically newly promoted. And it just feels like there's been like a rejuvenation, mm-hmm. you know, amongst Genoani, right?
That's exactly where I was going to go with. Like, of course, the first part I'm going to say, it feels in a way, quote unquote, that we're 1 year behind based on the fact of the relegation. So that means when you're building up towards whatever the new owners are trying to build, that means they're 1 year behind because obviously you have the Serie B in place. Mind you, from the outside point of view, to your point that you were saying, how about from the fan base, you were always like close to edging to the relegation. How does it feel going Serie B? I can see that, because who is another fan, Milan, Inter, Juve, or Napoli, whomever, do they really care? It's a new owner. Yeah, maybe not too much. But for us, it's a huge difference. So the Genoa close to edging relegation is not the same Genoa today.
That's also true. Yeah.
Especially from a club perspective. So management, ownership, you know, a whole bunch of things. So we're into this 777 Partners, which is a multi-property type of style, similar maybe to the Red Bull or the City. I don't know, a little bit different. All three of them are different among themselves anyways. But the fact of the Serie B, I would say to your point as well, Joe, the fact of this rejuvenation, I'm not sure if it is a record-breaking for Serie B itself. Probably not. But definitely the 22,000 for season tickets last year in Serie B was huge, huge, even for ratings and for followership, even from a Serie B perspective. And this year, where the record breaking for Serie A, anyways, was held by Sampdoria after the year after they won the Scudetto. They're making fun of us, but even their Scudetto now is starting to be quite old, right? So we're talking about 1991. So in 1992, they were holding the record for the attendance, somewhere around the 22,000s as well. And then we arrive, newly promoted, and with this huge, huge enthusiasm. Like, it was amazing. Even when Matt went to Genova, last match day of relegation, so we were already in Serie B, awful match, who cared about whatever the result was. But Matt was telling me so many young people. So even back then, because of the new ownership, plus the Serie B, so everything kind of built up together. And we got this new record-breaking season tickets of 27,777. They stopped it on purpose there to do the 777, right? But it could have gone even easily at 28. And number five in all entire Italy after big names, big numbers, big cities like Inter, Milan, Roma, and Lazio. So the two major big cities of Italy.
Don't forget, they also have their stadiums are way bigger, so they can allocate more tickets for season ticket holders, right?
You're right, and at different prices too, right? So obviously, once you know, the popular type of tickets for us is like the Gradinata Nord would be way less than the Curva A or Curva B compared to a Napoli. I understand the situation in Napoli is a little bit different with the prices and so on. So most likely also because I don't know, I understood, correct me if I'm wrong, people are more likely to buy the tickets on the go rather than getting the season ticket, which is a little bit odd, but it's interesting too.
Yeah, well, one thing they do in Napoli too now that's almost become mandatory, you kind of find out on a match-by-match basis, but they introduced this mandatory fan card. So in order to buy tickets, you have to have a fan card. That in itself costs 20 euros, which, you know, when you're adding it to the ticket price already, it starts to add up, especially for the casual fans. I think for the regular attendees, they know they're going to get their value buying the season tickets anyway. So the 20 euros is not going to make a big difference. But if you're an occasional fan, now you got to go through the hassle of figuring out, how do I get this fan card? On top of that, I got to pay the ticket price. So we've seen, like, there's been... the season ticket sales were still pretty good, but lower than you would expect for the champions of Italy, especially after 30 years of not being champions, and they're not selling out. They're close. They're getting like 45,000 people at matches, but I think it's tied to that fan card. And ticket prices in general have steadily risen. I mean, you know, the club is sort of walking the line a little bit in terms of ticket prices and fans. I mean, De Laurentiis is a character, as you know. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, he even last season, like, you know, a season where we were clearly going to win the Scudetto, you know, there was a point at which you knew there was going to be very difficult to catch us. And then we had this really disappointing loss to Milan. And part of that was the fans protested during a season where you know you're going to win your first Scudetto in 31 years, 33 years, whatever. And you have fans protesting and not cheering because of ticket prices or whatever. And then he took this really awkward picture with the ultras. And so, I mean, the club's relationship with the fans in Napoli is not the greatest. You mentioned 777 Group a few times. I saw the video that they put out about this bond issuance. And I guess, you know, more to that point of sort of restructuring the club and running it sustainably, I think was the key message in that video, is how they want to run the club. And, you know, I almost feel like even in that regard, getting relegated was a bit of an opportunity to kind of restructure, kind of clean house a little bit and start building the club the way they wanted it to be run. And then the other reason I thought maybe going to Serie B was probably an advantage, and I'm sure you guys can talk a lot about this, is that to me, it was the perfect way to get Gilardino into the first team, right? Like, he obviously, as you know, what was it, like 11 matches or something for the Primavera before he was promoted to the first team. And I wonder, like, would the club have taken that risk had Genoa been in Serie A? I mean, we look at, say, Pirlo at Juventus, obviously different situation because Pirlo didn't even coach a single game for the, I don't know if it was the Primavera or the next gen team, whichever one it was.
Right.
And Juve is a different monster altogether.
Right.
But to me, it almost felt like this was a great way to transition him into a Serie A manager, to give him a season in Serie B to kind of figure things out a little bit.
It's interesting you're saying that, but I can give you examples like Paladino, right? So himself, even though he was in Serie A, he did prove himself to be well worthy. Now, is it better perhaps at it's a totally different, as we call it in Italian, piazza. So that means sort of like a totally different environment compared to Monza. Monza's expectations are very different, even though we had the magical Silvio Berlusconi there, but the piazza, so the environment of Genova compared to Monza, the expectations and the pressure is hugely different. But, you know, Gilardino, I really think we even had some commentary that came out from an interview with our old owner, Preziosi. And even though similar to different owners that were like very few, actually, Cellino was one and the other one, I can't remember, that were firing and hiring 3, 4, 5 different coaches per year. But you cannot deny that right now, if you look in Serie A, previous coaches that he fished out, talking first in,
oh,
in,
well, yeah, absolutely,
Gilardino, then Juric, and then Thiago Motta, and so on.
Gasperini, you know?
Gasperini, absolutely. He was almost probably the first one out of this list. But he was saying that Gilardino is someone to look after, meaning that he's going to be like a big one. So that's our hope. Now, from there has to be the adjustment.
There's the irony in that statement. We just talked about the massive hope of Genoa with Preziosi being gone, and here's the hope that he's bringing back to us with Gilardino. Yeah, I always wonder how much really the club management knew what they had with Gilardino before that season. I kind of think it was a little bit of a happy accident, but it definitely, I'm with you 100%, Joe. I don't think this happens if we're in Serie A, because we just fell on our face with Shevchenko. We can't put another former Italian football star in charge and hope for the best. And it kind of, I think there was a natural fit there. Obviously, we were probably not prepared very well, especially at that point in the season, to make a pivot. We did want, and I think one of the more encouraging things about the club is this youth focus and trying to at least develop players at a younger level and move them on if we're not moving them on for our own good within the team. And so you've got a person who obviously players respect, who has a relationship at the youth level, who has done good things, at least in his minimal period in time there. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how much of it was a shot in the dark or this is really what it's going to be. But it, of course, we're all incredibly happy that it came about that way.
Well, he started, let's not forget, he started as an interim coach. But then
at the beginning of the season, no? Like, it was literally just the beginning of that season.
Well, it was...
Or was it the
back in December? So that's when he got him as he had three or four or five matches somewhere around there just to decide what to do. Yeah. And obviously his return was, except the one match against Parma. Looking at Parma right now, fantastic. But yeah, like except that one match, which he scolded the guys like crazy, they followed him like...
Oh, escalated the match.
Perfect. Well, yeah. Ascoli was like 0-0, a little bit more tough, and that's fine. But then it was a win after win after win. And thanks to his mentality, his approach, his friendship, he creates this bond more than friendship with the players. If you look at the Girone di Ritorno, the second leg, basically Genoa killed it all. Because let's not forget, we were, I think it was sixth at the point when Gilardino came in. So, I mean, it's something remarkable, definitely. He has to definitely be adjusted now to Serie A. We had a very difficult calendar to start with Fiorentina at home, with the match at Roma. Mind you, we won, but that was good. And then the match against Torino, which I think Torino this year is one of the contenders, at least, if not for Conference or Europa, one of the two.
Yeah, it's a good squad.
And Juric, we know him. That was another one, sorry, on the list as well of coaches. And now Napoli. So it's not easy. Then we're going to have a little bit of easier matches that gives you a breather, maybe, perhaps, because all these even smaller teams that were doing decently lower level last year, this year, they're surprising everyone. Like when you consider Lecce, when you consider Verona, when you know, it's, yeah. I don't know what's going to happen this year. Actually, it reminds us a little bit of Serie B last year. It seems, I'm going to say it very softly, finally an interesting Serie A rather than a boring.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that's the part of the, we were looking and circling the calendar thinking maybe there's something that's going to happen there. But we've already seen a ton of unexpected results in these first three fixtures. Unfortunately, we don't have an easier one, this next one, of course, against Napoli. But it should be exciting nonetheless, I think.
Yeah, well, another one was Frosinone beating Atalanta. And, you know, for Napoli, like we started the season against Frosinone, we won, but it was kind of like, newly promoted club.
Right.
You know, the last time they got promoted, they went straight back down. Probably can't read too much into that. Then they beat Atalanta and you think, okay, maybe that wasn't the terrible result. Unfortunately, then we lost to Lazio, who you guys beat. I mean, logic would say you guys beat Lazio, Lazio beat us. I mean, if we're jumping to predictions, I think the... following the logic, it means Genoa is going to be Napoli. I'm sure we can talk about that. You know, what about, obviously, a big factor with this match on Saturday is it's the first one after the international break. I know, obviously, Retegui was with the Italian national team. I want to say Dragusin was with, I've been watching all the Napoli players. I think he was playing for Romania against Kosovo because Amir Rahmani's there. You know, how many Genoani or Genoa players were off on duty? Because I can tell you Napoli had 15 players all over the place. So that could factor into this a little bit as well.
We definitely did not have the same amount of numbers that you guys had. So besides two big names that did not call up for two different reasons, first one is Gudmundsson that is right now suspended for allegedly sexual issues back at home. And the other one was Malinovsky that was not called up by Ukraine. Otherwise, we had Dragusin that went out. We had Puskas that went out, both with Romania. We had Retegi, of course, with Italia. And I think that was it. I don't know if you can think of anyone else there, Matt, but...
No, I was about to say, I feel like that's pretty much our...
Right now, anyways.
Right, but... yeah, our guys. Because, I mean, obviously we had a couple of guys in the under 21 groups, but I don't think anybody got called up there. Like Maturo, I don't think played for...
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what can make this match a little bit closer than what might seem like a, you know, big team versus or strong team versus a weaker team. And no offense to Genoa, but like, you know, you've basically had your core group of players at home training for the last couple of weeks, whereas Napoli haven't. We've had our backups training. Politano picked up a calf injury with the Italian team. I mean, we've got plenty of depth, so I don't think it'll be a huge issue. But I think that, and of course, playing in Genoa, right? So I think those two combined can make this a closer match. And, it, you know, obviously the big thing for Napoli fans is, you know, how do we respond after that? What was our worst half in a really long time against Lazio, that second half? It's really suddenly opened up a lot of questions about Garcia and his style. And
I was going to ask you that, Joe, compared to last year. And again, as you're using that excuse with us, with respect to no offense to Napoli, but last year at a certain point, it came boring from a Serie A. And I'm remembering the super boring Juventus 9 years in a row. Like, is to me, that makes people go away following Serie A. I'm not saying it. Actually, it was exciting to see such a fresh and, you know, amazing, strong, super vibrant team that Spalletti had put together. Mind you, obviously, after when there were like 20 points, you know, difference between first and second, so like, who cares? Let's look at the other ones. No offense, of course, right? But, you know, you're starting to say, okay, that's already done, given. So
let's for sure.
Right? But this year, after this great season, a lot of critics are saying it's impossible that Napoli is going to do that again. And I'm assuming maybe that's the feeling among the Napolitani, but I want to hear it from you. Like, what's the expectation, not only with a new coach, but, you know, for the season?
Which, so I would say,
you kept a lot of good players too, right?
So, right, exactly. So, I mean, there's two ways you can look at that. I think the way most fans of other clubs are looking at it is that Napoli didn't do much on the mercato. The coach changed, and we brought in a guy who really hasn't achieved a whole lot in his career, at least not since 2007 or something in the French league. And we lost the best defender in the league, and we replaced him with an unknown Brazilian guy who hasn't seen the pitch at all, right? So that's how a lot of fans outside the club are looking at it, and that's warranted. That's all warranted. Mm-hmm. And this match against Lazio really kind of confirmed some of the concerns that some people have. I think some people are still jumping to conclusions a little too quickly after one bad half. I'd still like to see more. The flip side of it is we still have the Serie A MVP. Granted, he hasn't scored in a while, but I mean, that doesn't mean he's playing poorly. It just means now he's getting double and triple teamed, and that's Kvaratskhelia. We still have the Capocannoniere from last year, and that's Victor Osimhen. And as long as he stays healthy, either him or Lautaro Martinez are going to be the Capocannoniere again. You know, we still have all the key players in the midfield, Lobotka, Nguissa, Zielinski, who we thought was going to leave, and maybe Gabri Vega was going to come in. He ends up staying. That can be good or bad. I personally think it's a good thing. So, you know, all the components of the team are still there from last season for the most part, Kim aside. But the style under Garcia has been very, very different. It's certainly not Spalletti ball, and any Napoli fans are hoping to see Garcia play Spalletti ball. That's just not going to happen. It's not his way of playing. Garcia tends to be more direct, which is good for a guy like Osimhen, probably bad for a player like Lobotka, because Lobotka was so critical to Spalletti's system in that pivot. He was the quarterback, right? Everything went through him. We were very compact. There were patterns of play and quick, short passes, the triangles in the midfield. Whereas now we're seeing much more direct play, which means more long balls, probably less possession, because when you play the long ball, you're going to turn the ball over a bit more. And so it doesn't look like as aesthetically pleasing as the football we saw last season. And that doesn't mean you can't win. There's different ways you can win.
Right.
But it has introduced some question marks. And then the other thing that a lot of Napoli fans were a little concerned about from that Lazio match was just how Garcia used his substitutions, because the players looked exhausted. You know, guys like Anguissa, for example.
Right.
And he still left them in there. And then we had alternatives. So, you know, in an era where you're allowed five substitutions and when you have the depth that Napoli have, you expect to use all five, and he didn't. But then you have a guy like, you know, Anguissa, barely able to run anymore on the field, and a guy like Elmas, who never stops running on the bench, watching on. That led some of us to kind of start to get a little concerned. But for me, I think it's far too early still. I think it's also important to recognize that he's a new coach. Yeah, he may play the same system on paper, but it's a different style, as I said. So it's going to take some adapting for the players to kind of get used to his way of playing as well. The key thing, though, is we just need to hope that Milan and Inter in particular, maybe Juve as well, because they don't play in Europe this year, don't get too far ahead before we kind of get into a rhythm. Fortunately, you know, we have the Derby della Madonnina this weekend, so hopefully they both draw points, or at least one of them will, right? And that's an opportunity for Napoli to get back closer to the top.
That's a good point. Definitely change of coach can be good or bad, depends. Like in this way, you didn't introduce a coach because you're doing bad during the year. That's what, at least what year we were used to. But you got a new coach because the other one said, okay, I just need a sabbatical. Then obviously that BS thing happened with Mancini. So obviously then we saw ADL saying, no, I don't want to give it you, Spalletti, you know, that whole bunch of history around that. It's like, let's don't even go there. Anyways, so for sure, the difficulties I can see with the different styles of the two different coaches, especially like an asset of a squad that was modeled most likely around Spalletti's formation rather than Garcia's. So Right. Is it the whole team that has to now follow Garcia, or is it Garcia that has to follow Spalletti? And it seems more the first one. You know, I guess it's not easy.
Yeah, and but the thing is, though, I think Napoli still have the players to play the style that Garcia wants, and we did make a couple late additions. I mean, Jesper Lindstrom was sort of the main one, and he really is, that is a Garcia-type player, because what he likes tactically is for his wingers to drift towards the middle of the park. He likes to attack through the middle and have his fullbacks get forward, which is well-suited to a player like Di Lorenzo. Obviously, you know, he likes to get up and down that right wing. But there's some tweaks need to be made because, you know, we've seen Garcia has played Matias Oliveira on the left side, a left back. And what you don't want to happen is both of your fullbacks get forward at the same time. Because unless someone like Lobotka or Anguissa drops, you really expose yourself on the counterattack. You leave a lot of space in behind. And we saw that in that Lazio game, right? Like, we had more of the possession. We had more shot attempts and all these things. But it seemed like whenever Lazio got forward, it looked like they were going to score. And in fact, they did. Just a couple of the goals were disallowed for narrow offsides. So I think Garcia has a few tweaks to make there and getting the balance right between the attack and the defense. But I think the pieces are still there to have a successful squad, a strong squad. The other thing that's really a big question mark for Napoli fans is the center back situation.
Yeah.
And the next few rounds are going to be a big indicator of what's going on, because you know, the big question mark in the summer, and we all knew it was going to happen, was Kim Min-jae's release clause was going to be exercised. He was going to go. Who are we going to replace him with? We were linked to pretty much any center back that might even be remotely available and their brothers and sisters and mothers. And then after all of these people that we were linked to, we end up signing a relatively unknown guy from Brazil. Mind you, I spoke to a Brazilian football expert, and he basically told me he's like a top two Brazilian center back. There's one guy that he said he prefers, which is Murillo, who was more expensive. The problem is, and these are what the reports are, and fans are starting to get a little bit frustrated, is that he didn't speak the language. I don't think he even spoke English. So that makes the transition more difficult, because how can you coach a guy that doesn't understand what you're saying? Even if he has, you know, Juan Jesus and Mario Rui that can translate in Portuguese. And then, of course, he's coming from Brazil. He's not coming from, you know, Kim at least was playing in Europe. Even if it was Turkey, it was Europe, right? And the pace of the game is different. So that takes some time getting accustomed to as well. People will say, yeah, well, you know, Lindstrom, he wasn't coming from a big league, or he didn't need time. We played him 4 days after he joined Napoli, but, you know, he was playing in Germany. He played in the Europa League. He played in the Champions League. It's much easier for a player like that to transition to Serie A. So could we see Nathan, who's the Brazilian center back we signed in this match? We probably won't see him against Braga, and, you know, we're not going to start him, give him his first game in the Champions League. But then after that, you know, we have Bologna, Udinese. So there's a couple of games. It'll be curious to see when he gets inserted into the squad. Or, of course, do we finally start using Ostergaard, who's been kind of waiting patiently for his opportunity?
I was going to open up also with that one. First, before I go to Ostergaard, I wanted to say, so you still believe that this Saudade, which is this, we heard it back in the day, even before my time or our time, anyways, with the Brazilians coming into Italy, with this melancholic type of, you know, adaptation or adapting to the Serie A or Italy, different continent as well. So it's called Saudade. Do you still believe that is possible nowadays?
I might be trying to convince myself more than anything, to be honest. I mean, if he doesn't speak English, then I believe it because, right, you know, nowadays everyone seems to speak English, right? That's how Kim came in. He didn't speak Italian, but he was playing right away and continued to. But he spoke English enough, at least. So that being said, when Nathan gave his presentation conference, he was already speaking a little bit in Italian and doing fairly well. And then as the interview went on, he kind of started relying on the translator a bit more. And so that's been a focus. I mean, the reports were that also that the coaching staff are going to spend a lot of time with him during this international break. So we'll see. My opinion is that I don't think we're going to see him start the next couple matches. Maybe the ideal situation is we have a game where we have a 2 or 3 goal lead, whether it's against Genoa or against Braga or against Bologna, who's not an easy team anyways. But hopefully you get one of those situations where you can at least bring him in off the bench and give him a bit of time just to get a feel for the game before you start starting him, right? And if you need to, with the schedule, we have Ostergaard. I mean, some people feel like, you know, he's right-footed. He's really more of a backup to Rachmani. But I watch all the international games, and for Norway, he almost exclusively plays on the left side of the center back pairing. So I know he can play there. Mm-hmm. I mean, the concern with Ostergaard is that he's a little bit prone to a costly error. And, you know, an error from a defender sometimes leads to a goal. It's different than an error from a striker who misses the target or whatever, like that happens. So that's really the big concern amongst the Napoli fans for sure.
So before I turn it back to you, Joe, with respects to Leo Ostergaard, Matt, do you want to add something that you want to ask to Joe?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I think this is a thought out loud. If Ostergaard does start, it'll be interesting. I'm sure it'll be a warm reception from the Marassi, but we've not had a ton of those moments. I guess most recently was Allegri a little bit, I think, got something, even though that was away from home, from the fans. And obviously there's a lot of history there with him in the club and his heroics last season for the good of the cause, as we can maybe can say, against our rivals. But I guess I would say this match, I think, will be a really interesting tactical battle, you know, and having some of the background on how Napoli have approached the last few matches kind of makes it even more interesting too, because I think for us, we've seen Gilardino try to find his way a little bit within the Serie A season and in how he wants to approach these matches. I think obviously match week one did not go as planned. Since then, we've pretty much trotted out a 4-3-2-1 with maybe some modular exceptions in the matches or some fluidity or something to that degree, which was kind of a departure. Last year, we saw a pretty much always 5-3-2 type of a formation, or maybe if you want to call it 3-5-2, depending on how you look at those fullbacks. But I don't know. I mean, I'm really curious, Joe. I'm not at all worried about Napoli's ability to break down defense. But, you know, if Genoa come out this one in the same way we've approached the last two matches, which is really just kind of keep it tight and maybe try to nick something forward, do you think that plays to our advantage? Does that seem something that maybe Napoli can exploit? I think the biggest thing, if we go down early, it's going to be, I think we're going to try to chase for a point and then it can get a little bit out of hand. But I wonder how you think Napoli might approach this one.
I think Napoli is going to play their style of game. So it's going to be a high press and try to put pressure. If Genoa can get past that opening 15, 20 minutes, let's say, then I can see this match going a number of different ways, to be honest. Like, I'm certainly not looking at this as, oh, you know, newly promoted club, guaranteed win. By no means. Not playing, you know, away. And that formation, if Napoli struggle to break it down, like, we have plenty of creativity, which helps.
Right.
But we've also been a little bit predictable. And so I think defending can work. Obviously, with Osimhen in the area, that's always a threat. I'm expecting Mario Rui to finally start over Oliveira, which provides, a more dangerous threat in terms of crossing the ball, because mm-hmm. his cross is much better than Oliveira's. And definitely, you know, an early goal would completely change the complexity of the match, because that forces Genoa now to, at some point, seek an equalizer, which opens up the park and therefore provides more space to pass through. But as I mentioned before, Napoli have looked very vulnerable on the break, right? So I can also see Genoa holding it down, making it very difficult to break through. Napoli maybe starting to get a little bit frustrated. And as the match wears on, if it stays that way, getting more frustrated, maybe start to send guys forward a little bit more and take a little bit more risk. And that's where you expose yourself to that counterattack. I'm still expecting a positive result from Napoli. And again, I think one of our biggest strengths is the depth of the squad. So, I mean, another big question mark is, will Raspadori start? Garcia likes him a lot. The problem is he just doesn't seem to have a position, right? Because, you know, Osimhen is the number nine. After the Italy match, Raspadori said that's his preferred position. Well, sorry, you're not going to play there with Osimhen in the squad. He can play on the left wing, but we have Cavada there. So one of the options is, can he play on the right wing as the Politano replacement? It's probably his least preferred position. Like, even at Sassuolo, he played on the left wing sometimes and as a false nine, but not so much on the right wing. Garcia's tested him out there. He's tested him out in the midfield. Another way you can incorporate him is you play him as a number 10 in a 4-2-3-1. There's been some rumors about that. My feeling is that it's going to be a typical 4-3-3 and you have Raspadori on the bench, but that's an option you can bring on if you're struggling to score, as is Giovanni Simeone, right? So, and that's another thing that we've seen from Garcia a few times now, where when we need to score, he's actually switched to a 4-4-2 and played Simeone and Osimhen as two big strikers in the area that we can play the cross into. It hasn't really worked, so I'll be curious to see if he continues to push that option. But obviously, with the depth that we have, I think Napoli have the creativity to try to break it down. But yeah, as you can tell from a lot of what I've said so far, is I'm not as confident as maybe some Napoli fans are in terms of how this match is going to go.
Yeah. We are the ones that are supposed to be a little bit more cautious, not you.
Yeah, but it's also the Napolitano sort of superstition.
So the match is going to be on Saturday. As you mentioned, we have the first match of champions now that is going to be against Braga, which in my opinion is probably the weakest in the four teams. Hmm. But it's 4 days right after. So as you said, having the Nationals coming back, didn't even train too much. They only have these few days right now. Then eyes in sight towards the first match, which is important to get those points as fast as possible in order to make sure that you're in the top two anyways, mm-hmm. and not fall for the third. So being relegated down to Europa, or definitely not the fourth, like Juve has taught us. But it's 4 days after. So do you foresee that is going to be a little bit of a rotation based on the names that you also mentioned, or probably not? And this is more important compared to keeping one player versus another.
I think we might see two or three changes. I'm not expecting a ton of rotation because we have the options, right? So like Elmas starting over Zielinski, for example, against Braga is something I can say. I mean, Elmas is practically a first-team player. You're not going to lose a whole lot there. I think a lot will depend on how the Genoa match goes as well, right? If it is a tight match and we're forced to leave our starters out there for longer than what we might have if we had a big lead, then that influences the decisions for the Braga match as well, because the objective has to be to win both of these matches. So I think Garcia is going to have to try to find the right balance there. And there might be a little bit of risk-taking as well, right? Like, let's say Napoli have a one-goal lead against Genoa. he may still make a couple of changes with that Braga match in mind, which is risky, right? Because if you concede, then everyone's going to say, why did you change something that was working and so on? So I'm not expecting a ton of rotation. If anything, I think we might see more rotation for that Bologna match after Braga, where, again, it's still an important match, still a difficult match. But at that point, if you've rolled with the same guys two matches in 4 days, after a number of them just played also a lot of minutes for their national teams and traveled and whatnot, now you're forced to rotate. So,
right.
You know, what I'm expecting, it was something that's what Spalletti did when he was around, was that you make 2 to 3 changes for each of these matches, and that gives you enough freshness of legs in the squad without changing up the team so much that it affects the way they play.
Yeah, I don't think we have the benefit of, you know, looking forward towards a top-tier European club in the midweek match or something. It's Braga, so it seems. And also, the league, of course, is super important. I mean, I know we are with you in terms of the superstition element, too. And I think one thing that's going to be really, really interesting this year in this match, and this is something I'm kind of keenly focused on, but I'm sure other Genoano are too. So we love Martinez, we love our keeper, but we have this way under Dila, which I think is kind of a split decision amongst Genoano, in where we play through the back. And we don't exactly have, you know, these gilded footed defenders and keepers back there. And watching that match against Torino, seeing their opening match against Fiorentina, watching how we played also in the cup, almost losing that match to Modena. We are not exactly safe of errors in trying to play out of the back under pressure. And I'm really curious if we get pressure again from Garcia and from the Napoli team coming in the first few minutes of the match, if something happens, do you see all of a sudden this change of energy? I don't want to like put too much of that out there in the world because I don't want to see that happen, but I'm really, really interested because I think one of the things we really kind of found the right balance with Lazio. I think against Torino, we saw a little bit of what we saw also against Fiorentina, where we just could not really find also a link between our midfield and our forwards. And so like that combination of having a hard time really dealing with pressure when it's really in our own half and in our final third, especially, and then moving the ball forward in that same way. I know that's been Gilardino's focus because I think he was completely outwitted in the first match. And honestly, I think he had a game plan for the last match that just didn't quite go to plan. So it's really an interesting thing to watch to see if he's able to adapt to this, because I'm expecting that's going to be his style. We're going to want to still play from the back. We're going to want to still try to soak up some of that pressure. But those things don't exactly go hand in hand, you know? You know, sometimes you see those, like a classic EPL example of like huffing the ball forward and then reorganizing. We're not exactly doing that. So it'll be interesting to see if we abandon that. I don't think we will, and how that kind of affects at all how the players approach the match and what happens there.
I think it's a very risky approach. I mean, yes. Torino is a team, and Fiorentina as well, that defends very aggressively, right? And if you watch the first half of Napoli-Lazio, you'll see that even a team like Lazio, who have been playing under Sarri, now what is it, their third season under Sarri,
mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, playing Sarri ball, he is one of these coaches that plays out of the back and quick passes. Lazio could barely hold on to the ball in that first half. Napoli were all over them with the press. But then the second half, once Napoli got a little bit tired and weren't able to press as aggressively, then the opposite happened, because the problem, and you know, I mentioned the compactness earlier, the problem with Garcia's Napoli so far, and again, we'll see if he tweaks this, but it feels like his team is not as compact. It's certainly not as compact as Spalletti's Napoli. Like, Spalletti was very clear. You should have no more than, say, 25, 30 yards between the last defender and the striker. And that makes it difficult to play through. And in fact, that's what Sarri did to Napoli. And it worked really well, because I'm sure Sarri knows that Garcia likes to attack through the middle. So he made this kind of box in the middle of the field and crowded it, and that made it difficult for Napoli to attack through the middle. So when Napoli are stretched, when they're not as compact, if Genoa can play through that front line of press, which is very difficult, Osimhen on his own has sometimes created goals just by pressing, because he's so fast and his strides are so big. Right. But if you can play through that and get the ball into the midfield, now you're going to find a lot of space. So that can kind of go both ways, but I still think it's going to be, for how aggressive Napoli's press is, you're playing with fire a little bit to try to play through that, for sure.
I'm smiling because that's our weakest spot. For sure, there's definitely this fact of the back. And you're right, Matt. Absolutely, this factor of it just needs to be a little bit faster, more tight, or more, you know, closed eyes type of approach. While our issue, and this is where all the media and comments and fans and critics and so on have been saying the biggest issue, and you saw that in all three matches, including the Coppa Italia against Modena, is basically the balls coming from the midfield over to the attackers. So this year, we don't have the excuse of not having forwards, because we do have them. The issue is the midfield bringing the balls over to the front. So if we are able to pass that, that's where we're going to stop anyways, because we're not doing it.
No, I'm sorry. Oh, I see what you...
So then it looks really dire for us this weekend, huh?
Yeah. So, well, the rumors have it that Gelladino has been working a lot on that. He's a great tactician. So I'm sure he's been screaming at players. He's been not sleeping. He did say that he barely sleeps when he's preparing these big matches. So he's going to come with even less hair than what we saw him last time.
He's making it, making up for it at the back, though.
Yeah, he is getting a little party back there. I kind of like it.
But no,
well, one thing that's interesting, though, I mean, you guys commented on how well, almost surprisingly, how well Gilardino's defense is, considering he was such a lethal striker. But right. To me, I think it makes perfect sense, because as a striker, he knows how strikers think, and therefore he can plot on how to stop the way strikers think, right? So that'll be very interesting to see how he plans for Osimhen.
But you would also think, being a great striker as he was, he should teach to the midfield to say,
yes, how I to need get the ball to the striker.
Yeah. Exactly, you know? I mean, it could play in any side of the pitch, but no, but that's true. Like, I don't know. It's going to be quite an interesting game, but let's don't talk about the predictions yet. We're going to get that in a moment. I wanted to talk quickly about the Gemellaggio. So I know we can't really speak for the fans. This is an ultra thing, has nothing to do with the players, has nothing to do with the team nor ownership or whatnot. But the Gemellaggio between Genoa and Napoli was probably the longest in history, of Italian history. It started in 1982 and it ended a few years back, just not too long ago. Anyways, like 2 or 3 years ago, something like that. And I remember two seasons ago, when we were in Serie A, when we went to Napoli, some bad things have happened. Mind you that you guys are so huge that you have Curva A and Curva B, which are quite different between the two, I don't know, politics, not politics, group, not group, I don't know. And if I'm not mistaken, so don't quote me on this one, I think the issues were around with the Curva B. I don't know how much you're into all this or whatnot, but apparently some rumors, and I'm not saying this to point fingers or whatnot, but just to comment on this and see what your take is on that, a lot of fans from this Curva B, when Genoani went to Napoli, sure, the Gemellaggio had died there, but you know, I know for a fact there's a huge, still great friendship among different fans, but they got cornered in Napoli saying, you ain't coming back here to Napoli. This is not a picnic. It's not camping ground. So get away, type of thing. But what do you think about all this and what can happen? Not that we can predict any of this stuff, because as I said before, it's just fan stuff. It's nothing to do with fan, like ultra, not even ultras or whatever you want to call it. But what do you think?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not as familiar with the history of the ultra groups, but I mean, just speaking generally, if you follow the Serie A sort of sports judge reports, pretty much every round that Napoli plays away from Napoli, the fans are singing about Vesuvius erupting, and then they get fined, the clubs get fined and all this stuff. So I wouldn't mind if that Gemellaggio returns, just because it would be nice to have a set of fans that we got along with, because it seems like everybody hates us sometimes. And although, I mean, there's, depending on who you ask, I mean, obviously I speak to a lot of Napolitani both here and there, and it's a lot more offensive to them you know, it seems like the people who are singing these chants and fans of their clubs, even on this side of the ocean, feel like, look, it's just banter. No one actually wants the volcano to erupt and destroy the city. But the people there take it very, very seriously, and they are very, very offended by it. And obviously the league, you would think they agree if they're fining clubs for doing this every time. So it would be nice to have a Gemma Lajo again with, you know, especially with a historic club like that, and knowing that it went on for so long. I seem to recall that, I don't know if it had something to do with a fan being killed in a brawl or something, and that kind of ended it. And I don't know the exact reasons behind it. But yeah, especially for us, maybe a little bit different for you, Fabri, but certainly for Matt and I, you know, it's almost something that's hard for us to understand, like the yeah. ultra culture, right? Because it's so different than
even Joe. Than, you know, Joe, yeah. don't I don't even understand it. But yeah, I think yeah. sometimes they're just pathetically ridiculous, all of them. But you know,
yeah, it's but a whole different podcast, probably.
Yeah, we had our own skirmish with Fiorentina fans, a small contingent of them when they came into Genoa.
Yeah, that's another hatred there going on. But you know, I do understand it perhaps a little bit more with respect to that. I lived it, so I've seen it. Do I understand it? No, but I see it or know. Maybe some things more or why, but yeah, I do understand when you say that they get a lot more offended, because I get pissed when someone says there are two teams in Genoa. That's not true.
Yeah. Or the other worse version of that, which we won't even bring up on this podcast. I'm curious, because like this, yeah, it's been 2 years. I know I live most of this stuff vicariously, honestly, through like members of the Genoa Club in New York who do know this more. And it's basically me like Google translating WhatsApp messages all the time. So I don't have any real understanding of this stuff. But I know there was surprise, I think, from that incident. There still were plenty. This was kind of like a big match for us because, if I'm not mistaken, it was like the second to last match and we were already down, or it maybe confirmed we were going down when we lost. That's exactly what happened. And so there's that weird scene where all the players seem like it happened every single match that year. After the game, they were kind of like going over to the fans and kind of beside themselves. And you have to acknowledge the fans who are still going crazy and celebrating. But once again, you lost. And it's that kind of weird picture. But there were many, a decent number of traveling Genoa fans for that match. And so this has historically been one, obviously, where there's that brotherhood, and there's, you know, the Mia fraternity, like that whole thing has been there on both sides for many years. So I'm curious, with it going back to Genoa, if it's going to be more of that, if you're going to see any messages even like that from the Gradinata Nord, or now the Gradinata Zena, the former Gradinata Sud, which will not be reclaimed. That's one thing I'm sort of curious about too. I'm not sure if we'll be able to pick up from the CBS. In the US, we have the Paramount Plus broadcast. I'm not sure. It's probably the same broadcast, actually, you guys are watching too. But I'm curious how that will actually play out, if at all, on the match day. I don't think it will. My hunch is that it won't be a big thing. But
yeah, and my understanding is it's still a cordial relationship. It's just no longer a Gemma Lajo, right?
Right.
Well, a lot of people talked about generational change as well, so that can factor in some things. I was just reading a little bit now about it. I couldn't remember, as I mentioned before, but essentially, very high level, because I think it's a little bit more complex than that. But at a certain point, the Genoani had demonstrated, not friendship, but I'm trying to look at this word, thinking about this word in English, solidarita, it's called, like sympathy.
Solidarity is probably the literal.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. I didn't know if it was translated the same, but with Interisti fan, from something that happened with about the death about this Daniele Bellardinelli, I think something about that happened against the Nizza fans or something like that. And because Napoli and Inter are definitely not friends, I think they took it too much to heart and they got pissed. Why? You're our friends, our Gemma Lajo. In my opinion, it was like a very silly reason to end the Gemma Lajo, but you know, they're ultras and that's why we don't really understand them. No offense to them, of course, right?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
As you said, there's still a lot of friendship, a lot of Napoletani that have moved to Genoa. So there has always been this friendship, as I said, the longest probably in the history of Serie A. But next match is coming up Saturday. Let's talk about predictions. So let's see. We talked already about a few things. We talked about the fact of nationals that have coming in. from your side more than ours. We talked about also the midweek match that you guys have for Champions League. So we talked about a few weaknesses from both sides and whatnot, but I guess let's deep dive into what apps we're expecting and I guess what the heart says, but also what the brain says. Let's start with you, Joe.
As I alluded to throughout, I think it's going to be closer than what people might expect. I mean, I haven't checked the sports books, so I don't know what the bookmakers are predicting. For me, I mean, it's hard for me to not predict a Napoli win. I think Napoli are going to be motivated by the defeat to Lazio. They're going to be eager to get back on track. Again, knowing that the derby is this weekend, it's an opportunity to regain some ground. I mean, obviously, it's so early in the season that clubs are going to draw points. Again, hopefully not looking too far ahead to the Champions League, because that's an easy way to draw points in a match like this by not being focused. And that's on Garcia to keep the players focused. And again, he's had the time to plan for this match and to make adjustments and review the footage from the Lazio match and see what worked and what didn't work, which should be easy because what worked was what we did in the first half and what didn't work was what we did in the second half. So for me, you know, I think we still have the motivation. We still have the players playing in a difficult environment, but I'm going to go with a 2-0 Napoli win. I think we've scored, you know, I think we're averaging 2 goals a match. Genoa's been struggling to score. I mean, you guys have talked about the lack of service to Retegui. So I would say if Napoli can score more than one goal, I should be fairly confident in a victory there.
Unfortunately, Joe, I have to agree with you on a lot of this. I feel a little differently to Fabri as to why we're not scoring. It's the same problem, but I kind of look at it differently. And that's also why I think this is really exciting for us, because as we've talked about on the pod, conceptually, we've had more time with our first team in this off week, trying to address some of the problems. We've had more of the squad there. From my perspective, we've not been able to advance the ball because we've not been able to properly address positioning in the press with this relatively new formation. Last season, we were really, really reliant on our fullbacks getting a lot of the ball in. We had these kind of ridiculously long crosses that were coming in and reliant on players like Sabelli, who no one thought would be a key player, to really bring the ball in and have these wonderful crosses. Granted, not all of them really did that much. And you talk to some people and they say he's got a square foot or whatever the Italian phrase is that everybody knows better than I do. But still, that was like a big part of how we played last season. If we can somehow figure out how to better position our midfield, I know Frendrup is more of a defensive midfielder, but we've seen decent passes from Strowman before. We know Badal is capable of some crazy defensive unlocking passes, even if that's a throwback to another era of his kind of career, perhaps. But I'm curious if we can kind of find that balance. I'm not sure Napoli is exactly the opponent that will let us do that. So while I would expect some improvements maybe versus at least how we had previously set up in Fiorentina going back to the first match, I do think we'll still come up short here. I do think it might be 2-0. I'll go ahead with more of like a silver lining vote and say it might finish 1-0. I think we are prone to giving up some decent chances. Maybe Martinez makes some good saves. I do think we'll look a little bit sharper in how we're kind of working here. I do also expect us to continue with, at least for now, the 4-3-2-1 formation that we've been putting out there. One player who's on my X-Factor list, who Fabri and I talked about the last podcast, and I'm going to go the opposite way I did the same last podcast, is Malinovsky. We were just chatting about this with our friend Eddie as well. So he's not been anywhere really in the first three games. And I think it maybe has to deal with his kind of skill set and how it fits within this group. I wouldn't be so surprised if we happen to get a little fortuitous free kick opportunity and he converts something there. So that could be one way, if we are struggling to make that service, where we can maybe get a surprise result. But I think it will be tough. I am most concerned about Napoli's pressing ability and our ability to break out of that in our own, really our own third, more than any other part of the pitch. But we'll see how it goes. Hopefully we have some good adjustments. And I think either way, both managers are going to have to react to each other during the match, which is always fun to watch.
I'm going to first give a little bit of spiel about it before I give you my answer to that. But let's say for the first time, Genoa has seen a coach where the people are with him. So the only coaches where the people, so the fans, the fan base was with the coach were Gasperini and Ballardini. So this is the first time that we're seeing a coach that the fan base is just like with him because of everything that he had done with Serie B. Having said that, so I'm just looking at it from a fan perspective. So you will always hear the Ferraris almost full sold out, I'm assuming, and I'm hearing. So at least no less than 32,000-33,000 people. And that's including Napoletani, of course, right? So you're going to hear a wall of people, the 12th man, whatever. Everybody knows that going at the Ferraris is difficult, when, especially when you have this type of numbers. Definitely, we do not want to see, Gilardino is the first one. You even said that, Matt, in the last pod, saying it's not that Gilardino is blind. He knows what the issues are. We know that we cannot base it all on defense. Right. We cannot continuously give ball possession to the opponents at home and away, and then just hope for the typical, you know, cross. And he will be working on these crosses, because that's one of the things that has been missing. And that's why these balls are not getting all the way out to, whether it's coming from the back, whether it is Sabelli, whether it is from Bradel, we don't know. But that's definitely something that he's going to be working on. We know that the squad is not complete, and we know that Gilardino is trying to make his image on this squad. He changed it from the 3-5-2 of last year into a possible 4-3-2-1, 4-3-1-2, depending on. But to Matt's point as well, Malinowski still has to fit within this model, and he still needs a few matches. And definitely, it's not going to be the Napoli match that is going to make the difference, but definitely there has to be some changes with respect to the forward side compared to the last three matches. Because even the shots on goal just tells you enough of what the issue stands there. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I still think that even though the Torino match ended how it ended, it still showed, similar to what happened with Lazio, that if we want, and we are very tight together, it is not almost impossible, because Torino can only thank, you remember it, Matt, but I don't, the name of the forward that strike the goal. If it wasn't for that guy that just came off the bench, it would have been a 0-0 all over. What I'm trying to say with this is, I do see that this match can lead towards a 0-0 based on the fact that if the players, general players, are what they showed with Lazio and Torino, except for that one mistake that we have done, giving the opportunity for that wonder goal that the Torino striker did, even though we have totally a different team compared to Lazio, is probably the closest. Mind you, they were like number two last year, right? Surprise maybe towards the end, but still, it still shows that I think at the back, we're solid if all the players are with their mindset and so on. Having said that, I think for the first time, I'm going to give you a result based on my heart and not my brain, and I think it's going to be a 0-0.
I like it.
You know what? That's not that unrealistic of a prediction. I mean, if you look at the stats with Napoli this year, one of the biggest changes from last season is last season, we consistently outperformed our XG, and we saw it. We were scoring wonder goals, Cavada from curling from outside the box, and Osimhen from tight angles, and all these crazy goals. And I do feel a little bit like we've regressed to the mean in that regard. And what you're seeing is Napoli attempting a lot of shots, but hitting the target very little. So we have probably most shot attempts in the league, a lot more from outside the area than we did under Spalletti, but struggling to hit the target. And then on the reverse side of it, we're conceding amongst the fewest shots in the league, but we seem to concede goals every time we get, every time the ball hits the target. So the stats have flipped on us a little bit. I mean, and leave it to Napoli, we are the perfect club to wake up a player like Malinowski, who's going to like fire a rocket from 25 yards out. I mean, he has an absolute cannon that's still there. And, you know, given the way this season it has been going so far, obviously it's very early, but it wouldn't shock me in the least if this was the game that he woke up with one of those goals, and it, you know, maybe a, anything between 0-0 and 2-1 or 1-2, I think is still realistic.
Agreed.
So it can technically be also a tripleta. What is that, what you're trying to say? So it could be going anyway.
Yeah, meaning exactly. I genuinely think it can, which is, is a concerning thought for Napoli fans because we should be confident in a victory here. But, you know, maybe I'm a little bit scarred from that Lazio match.
Well, definitely we're scarred from the Torino one. So we're both in the same place. So that's not good for us because we didn't want a Napoli come all angry over to Genova.
So that will do it for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you again to Fabrizio and Matt for having me on and allowing me to share the conversation here. If you like the show, please share it with a friend and leave us a rating and or a review on your favorite podcast platform. That always helps to extend our reach. You can also support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/ForzaNapoliPod. It's entirely voluntary. There are no set tiers, but it does help me to continue to produce content both on the show and on our website at ForzaNapoliPress.com, where you can find even more written content. I will be back next week to review this match and to preview our first match of the Champions League against Braga. But until then, I'm Joe Fischetti. Forza Napoli sempre!
Podcast Network. With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.